You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to ScamWow. I'm Caitlin Brodnick. I love scams and I love you. So excited to be back for another fun as hell episode. Today we have Rekha Shankar, who is so funny, guys. She's a writer for Animaniacs. She was a writer on Netflix's Magic for Humans, which we just adore, a writer for NBC's Grand Crew, which is premiering January 2022. And in 2020, she was selected for Just for Laughs New Faces Creators, which is a huge deal for comedians. It's awesome. I cannot wait for you to hear her. It's fabulous. We're Zooming. Her dog's involved. Pops in every now and then if you hear something in the background. And this episode, to clarify up front, because I think we talk about it, but we also talk pretty quickly because we're having a lot of fun. It's about how in 1984, Michael Larson went as a guest to Press Your Luck, the game show that is famous for saying, like, no whammies, whammies. And this is in the 80s. Now there's a new version, but he managed to scam and win the jackpot. And it turns out he won the most in television history ever won at that point on a game show. He was a lifetime scammer, and there is a hysterical documentary about it made by the Game Show Network, and it's ridiculous. Is it a scam? Isn't it a scam? Is it a savant? You tell us. Let us know. Always, you can email us at ScamWellPodcasts, contact us on Instagram, and call us on our hot tip hotline, because you know I love a phone call, which is 347-509-9414. I'm going to have that on my tombstone. Like, she wants a phone call in hell. I mean, heaven. Who knows where I'll be? It's nebulous. Ugh. Okay. Life is great. My son is loving school. I hate that he loves it secretly because I wish he was a tiny little baby in my arms again. The wind is blowing. A storm is brewing in New York City. But I'm so excited to share this episode with you. Enjoy. I am such a huge fan of these kinds of scams. I think these are the perfect scams. I love it.
Well, because it's not even a scam. It's like,
yes,
your game was broken.
Yes.
If someone cracked the code, you viewed it as a scam. It's like a legal scam because it's like, well, he just cracked a code that was already there. It wasn't like he stole. He played all the rules, but he was smarter than your game.
Yes. So guys, we're talking about the game show scammer, who is Michael Larson, who went on to Press Your Luck in 1984 and like we were saying, cracked the code and won the most amount of money ever won in a game show at that time. We both watched the Game Show Network documentary on it that they frame him like he is a high-class murderer, serial killer. Like, the severity behind this documentary was so comical to me.
Yes. It is very severe. What's crazy is, like, he, like, has some spirals mental health-wise after, it seems, after he wins all this money. But I'm like, I mean, really, he's just a dude that sat and watched this show 1 billion times and figured out the pattern on the board.
Right. It almost is. It did sort of look like he did have, it was a person with a mental health issue, because as they talked about in the documentary, he set up his TV with multiple TVs playing VHS tapes and live of past Press Your Luck shows. I think it was up to a year he watched it. Like, he just sat there and watched it. He neglected his relationships. He had a son, no mention of that or seeing of him. In the documentary, they show his common law marriage wife, like, painting miniature dolls in the background, and I was like, I need to know her story.
Okay,
like,
wait, zoom. Yeah, rack wait focus, a minute. Zoom. Yeah.
How did the documentary go? Like, and you know, instead of having her, like, cooking or knitting in the kitchen, she's painting tiny porcelain dolls and looking over her shoulder. I was like, this is ripe. This is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, as Reiko was saying, is that he sat there and studied to find if there was a pattern or a glitch or anything remotely connecting the outcomes in Press Your Luck. And this was 1984. The computers were still new. Oh, God. I just got a text from my husband. You're shouting again. We have a three-year-old and I shout a lot.
So funny. That's incredible.
So he watched it to see if there was any glitch. And it turns out there were only actually five patterns. And he was the first person to figure out that suddenly you can find the sequence and you can figure out when it would get on a certain square.
Yeah.
And do you want to explain Press Your Luck?
Yeah. Basically, it's a game show where there's a board that has a bunch of little tiles on it. Mm-hmm. It's a real life board that you look at, that, and each of the tiles lights up in a quote unquote random pattern.
Right.
And depending on what the tile is, you could win like a vacation, or you could win $100, or you could get what's called a whammy, which is like the equivalent of spinning bankrupt in Wheel of Fortune or something.
Yes. And it was like a 1 in 6 chance of getting a whammy, because there were multiple whammies on the board at the same time. It wasn't just one whammy here or there. It was like you really got slaughtered by the whammies.
And if you've ever played those arcade games where you're like, you have to push the button to land on like the 1,000 tickets or whatever, it's a very similar concept that's just kind of like hand-eye coordination and reflexes. So like, very often, you know, people will not hit on the thing that they see, because it's very hard to have your brain communicate with your hand that quickly because the lights move so fast. But
I think they set it up that way on purpose. They're like, absolutely, the ones right before or that look exciting, by the time that you get your hand down, it's already on to the next one.
Right. Exactly. And so the only way you could sort of preempt that, besides having like incredible hand-eye coordination, is if you memorize the pattern on the board.
It was so smart. It was so smart. I thought it was amazing. And what's really funny is that Impress Your Luck, it's this charming host who's like dressed in like a pink bow tie vest combo, looking very charming, chatting up like all creepy 80s hosts did. All of the contestants were very loud, just like our game shows now, where you want to have sort of like the craziest person off on their meds, but almost off their meds, and like jumping and squeezing and cheering. And then they're always losing. They're constantly, like, no one does more than, I think, like $11,000. Like, that was the first guy. He was a big night. He got $11,000.
Yes.
And at that time, game shows never gave more, I think, than $30,000.
Yeah. So, like, I see the like, statistic or whatever for how much this guy made. So, Michael made, like, $110,000, which would be the equivalent of making $283,000 in one day on a game show. That's a lot.
That's a lot. And also nowadays, they're like, they have Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Like, now, it did say in the documentary that it set everything up to that level. Like, okay, people want more. It's more exciting.
Yes.
But it just was so fascinating how I was really cheering for Michael the whole time.
I was too, until you hear about, like, oh, you're bad to your common law wife, all these other things. But it is this kind of like, oh, if you just study, you can beat the system. Like, I like that. I respond to that.
I did. And then also, it was really funny because everyone in the documentary who was trying to give these personal anecdotes, like, God, you know, it really ruined us all. These are network executives who are already millionaires. So you're talking about millionaires who are always like, you know, it cost CBS Studios a lot of money. And it's like, bitch, you make so much money. You're fine.
Right. There's a really interesting episode of Planet Money about like game shows and how you produce one when you don't know who's going to win how many people will win. And it's like, it really is a lot of like game design where you have to design a game that like most people will lose. So that.
Right. Like casinos.
Yeah. Like you can't. And not lose completely, like on Millionaire, right?
Right.
Everyone usually walks away with something.
Something.
Whether it's in that $1,000 tier, the like $16,000 tier, whatever. And that's like chump change to like a network, like ABC or CBS or something. But like to account for like how many people are going to win $1 million? Like, I don't know. You know, in the first season, if you want to be a millionaire, one person did. And that was like, wow, incredible. Okay.
Incredible,
it's like just enough to get you to like, I'm going to tune in again or I want to be on this. Because if nobody wins, that's also a really bad game show.
Exactly. So it's like,
and then to budget for that.
Then it's like the show Wipeout, which is a different game show that I love when people get smashed by like foam cones. I really love a Wipeout. Yeah. 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 So exactly. They started, it really did set a whole new precipice for what audiences also wanted. But did you see in the documentary, they said it only aired one time. CBS did not let it go in any reruns.
Yes.
And it didn't get as much fame and attention as really Michael wanted to, because I think and we can talk about like his downfall afterwards, but the amount of work and time and sacrifice he put into memorizing these codes, I think he really wanted more pats on the back for that. Like, it seemed like everyone kind of shunned him and wanted to keep it quiet and pay him and move away. But he was really like, guys, I worked so hard for this.
It's embarrassing to the network, not in defense of the network, but it's embarrassing to them. That's like, wait a minute. Your thing was like figure outable, your like random sequence. It probably is embarrassing to the other contestants that have been on the show.
The one woman was pissed the whole time.
Every time
they turned to her, she was like, I wish I had won. Like, she was so crazy.
Yes. So like, I get that you don't want to ruin the allure of your game show that's supposed to be like, you know, a game of chance or whatever.
And
no, actually it's not. Like, that's why you can't count cards at a casino and shit like that, because it proves that you can break the game.
Yes. And I felt like when he had the sequences, so there's five sequences, and let's say there are 18 spaces going in a border. There's like a picture in the center of him ready to press the button. And then around him are 18 little squares in a border. Each square lights up. And what it was is that he found a sequence that basically said square one, then square 12, then square nine, then square four would hit. And he was able to, by the time he saw square one and square 12 light up, he knew that nine and four were next. So when it went to nine, he pressed down without it even going to four, because at the moment he pressed down was actually the exact same moment that the board would show the next number.
Yes.
And he also realized that like number four and eight on the board never had whammies. So if he pressed it down in that speed, working with his, you know, patterns, then he guaranteed to not get a whammy. But his first try, he tried a pattern and he got a whammy and he was completely devastated. But you could see his mind working, that he realized, okay, his speed of pressing down. There's a delay. So he had to, instead of pressing when it was on the four, he pressed on the nine right before it went to the four. But also those spots of the where there were no whammies were like the big cash money spots, like the 4,000 plus another turn or a trip to Maui. And it's really funny. In the documentary, they show him like slowly sweating and freaking out, like, this is a mastermind. It's like, he's just working very hard. He's just taking it very seriously.
Totally. It's very interesting. Because I did the Game Show Network produce that documentary, or did it just air on the Game Show Network? Because there is a thing, like whenever I watch a documentary, like when I watched The Last Dance, I loved it, but it's like produced by the NBA. I was like, okay, cool, we're not gonna get anything salty about
nothing
Michael Jordan
else.
In this.
No. Let me see.
And there's something in that regard of like, depending on who produced this, I'm like, I could see them trying to be like, this guy sucks.
What was very bizarre is that Press Your Luck guy hosted it. And he was the original host of Press Your
Luck. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which was bizarre.
Again, like, bias in all directions.
So much bias. I think it had to be produced by the Game Show Network.
Yeah, it was produced and aired by the Game Show Network.
Okay, yeah. And so the Game Show Network had this. The soundtrack was like a CSI investigation criminal intent. Absolutely. I mean, they really Absolutely. Pinned him as this terrible guy. And I was like, I was watching with my husband, of course, and I was like, I think he has a disability. Like, he definitely has a social disability. There's something going on. He talked about, they made the joke on the show that he ran an ice cream truck and he was at the point unemployed and he owed his daughter a birthday gift that he never gave her. Like, this person wasn't mm-hmm. actually thriving in society and doing yes. really well. And I think he came out there to win, but I don't think he came out there to ruin someone's life. And no. I asked before this podcast, I was like, wait, did the Game Show Network like implode after this? Because they kept saying, and we were never the same again. Like, and we uh-huh. were never changed again. And they were fine. They just kept going. They kept throwing yeah. money at things.
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. I think maybe there had to be more technology yeah. considerations given to these games. You have to like have the advancements in computer technology that make the board actually randomized, right. which I am now looking that they called Larson proof.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And that his brother, mm-hmm. I think, went on the show.
Oh, as a guest?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Larson's wow. brother. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So Larson has passed and he died yes. To throat cancer. But at the time, no one knew where he was. He was hiding as a fugitive. He was in Acapulco?
Apopka, Florida.
Yeah,
Acapulco is a different yeah. place.
I know, I was like, is there an Acapulco, Florida? I don't know about yeah, he showed up there and basically spent his money right away. And he also got robbed right away.
He got robbed $50,000, right?
Yes, which is immediately.
Like half of what he made.
Well, and the thing too, the gears were working in one direction for him, and then that was it. Like he cashed out all of his money in singles. He brought it all to his house.
Yes, for one of those like competitions where you like match the serial number to the dollar bill kind of thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Then yeah. yeah, then there were competitions and he was like, maybe we'll have the serial number. Like he kept trying to find other ways to win. But it did seem like they were just walking around their apartment with bags of cash. And if anybody walked by, they'd be like, this is insane. Like, he really needed to start hiding his stuff and learning from other people that are hiding cash in any way. An accountant, who cares? It was all out in the open. It was very, very ignorant. He had so much prep and preparation for the game show, but then no actual life experience.
Yeah.
Which made it sort of tragic in a way.
I was reading this like finance person I follow's Instagram today, and they were like, what to do if you somehow actually win the lottery, which is like kind of similar to winning a game show.
But what did they say?
It was like, shut your mouth. And like, yeah. don't like, I mean, this is different because it's a game show and it's like very public, but like, yeah, don't yes. fucking yap about it to everybody and make don't yourself a target. Me. Two, don't change anything about your life, like yes. for at least like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And three, like start investing, mm-hmm. put like a huge percentage of that into like investments. I'm like, yes. yeah.
that's all real. Checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the thing too, because we haven't really covered many lottery contestant winners on this podcast, but yeah. I've personally been sort of fascinated with it as a child. And a lot of time they call it like the curse that someone gets it, someone becomes incredibly public. And then once you buy that house, there are state taxes, there's property taxes that suddenly you have to start paying for. And if you blow your money all right away, in the next 5 years, you won't be able to continue those
Absolutely.
Payments on that
you
house.
You can't. My friend, yeah. this is smaller scale than that, but my friend won some like Game of Thrones thing where it was like uh-huh. a trip to San Diego from New York City. Yeah. And so that wasn't a cash prize, but it was like they put her up in a nice hotel, blah, blah, blah. Oh, she had to pay taxes on that, even yes. though it was not a cash prize.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes, we have a good friend and a listener, and she'll be excited that she won on The Price is Right.
Is it Austin?
No.
Okay. Because I have no. another friend who is on The Price is Right. Yeah.
But now I got to hear about that. But no, another friend of ours who we know from like from forever ago and from restaurants and worked with my husband, she won on The Price is Right. We went to see, but she couldn't tell anybody about it. And we went to see the opening in this bar during the day, they opened up for her in Sunnyside and we watched it. Incredible. And we were so thrilled. But then there was all this planning in the background that she won a car and she said it was the feeling that you actually do run up on the stage, like something comes over you and you start running up on the stage. But she did have to, I believe, pay taxes. And then she was like, I think I'm going to sell the car right away because the value wise, what am I going to do with a car in New York City? And it loses value pretty quickly. Like once you get a car, they're not that great after, not that great, but a used car, they go down in value after a year. Mm-hmm. And so it was all this discussion of how she was sort of going to finagle this amazing luck. But I felt so stressed out. I was like, I could not handle this much. And the car was being shipped from California. And I think she had to pay for that. I can't exactly remember the details. Yeah. But there was a lot of work, even though it was amazing and a gift in so many ways, that there was so much behind the scenes that nobody imagines when they're first like buying all those like yachts and stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. You got to have your head on your shoulders. You have to like run a little small business kind of. Mm-hmm.
Well, have you heard about that new tax thing that if you get, I only see it because it's on TikTok and I'm like a TikTok slut now, but it's if you buy one of those huge Hummers or whatever, like a car or something that is enormous and has a certain amount of weight to it, you can take that off. You can deduct that from your taxes.
Why?
It's considered a business expense and a business. It's disgusting. It's like one of the gas guzzlers' trucks. One of these guys I follow who's like, follow your accounting tips. And he's always running around somewhere in, I think, Asia and Europe. Uh-huh. And he's just the best. He's very cool. I'll put it in our link below. But I really like him as an accountant. And he was saying that there's this U.S. like tax break that if you file one of these huge trucks or cars, or like you'd see a contractor with an enormous truck he doesn't need, if you put that as, you can write all of that off on your taxes. So whatever you'd pay that year, you wouldn't have to pay the $150,000 you paid on that car.
Weird.
And put it under your account. It's very weird. It's very weird because it's not good for the environment. Yeah. It is in no way helping anybody else. But it's a way, I think, of that, like the weight and something of the car. I don't know what it is. And I kind of think it was one of those, guys, if you're an accountant out there and you know how this thing got started,
hit us please
DM me. I love accountants. I need to ask you about my own life. But it seems like a loophole that was created because like some rich guy, like some Amazon person was like, I have a big truck. I need it to get written off.
Absolutely. I'm like, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, makes no sense. It's
wow.
Horrible.
Beautiful.
Yes. He won $30,000 in a radio game because out of all the bills he got when he brought all those dollars home, when he cashed it out, he had to match a serial number with the same serial number that was on the bill that this radio show was hosting. So he got $30,000 from that. And I think what people were saying that he really became hungry for these fast, easy, quick fixes. And if he succeeded twice, he's doing great. Like there has to be something in your psyche that goes like, oh my God, I beat a whole system. I beat a whole network. I'm invincible. Yeah. And then from then on, he got involved in a multi-level marketing scheme called Pleasure Time, about a Ponzi scheme that involved a lottery in India that never existed. And so he was on the run for that. Like he has a lot of issues and he's unstable, but I am so impressed with the amount of time. Like he did old school Minority Report, like putting TVs up, studying how to just crack this case.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is truly wild. And in a time that is like you said earlier, like pre-internet, like this is not stuff you like can look up. He's not looking up ways to do this. He's just making everything up on his own, basically. Yes.
And it was very interesting because we were watching the documentary and they kept saying it was uncovered, it was undiscovered how he figured it out. And I think people were wondering, did he have an earpiece? Did he have a person on the set that was giving him clues? I think he won rounds of like hitting the ball and winning his luck 42 times. And the tech people listening, I think one guy was home, one person was a PA at the studio. She said at 6, they were all like, something has happened. He has cracked the code. The people that created the code had also said early on, like, there's not that many codes. I don't think, you know, it's not perfect, but the Press Your Luck producers, the director, they just didn't have that much faith in their audience. They'd never been proved that somebody would study that much and create sort of that web-based not like of knowledge. Because if I had created a program and somebody was crushing it in front of me on live TV, I'd know something had happened.
Absolutely. And that's like the embarrassment factor. And it's just like, it's so interesting because like nowadays, you know, someone on TikTok would find that in one evening. Like the show would happen one night and they would figure it out. But like, I just feel like it is just so different then. Like that's such a surprising, crazy thing to have happened then.
Yes. Well, he walked that all the other hackers could run. And so I think it's pretty incredible. And we were saying on the documentary, everybody was so sorrowful. They were so upset that they got caught. When it was like before, you were just duping all these people. People were coming on. You were using their like disappointment and shock as your complete entertainment. You know, they weren't really paid very much.
Absolutely.
And this guy did it. It was just, I salute him so much. Now, was he a horrible dad? Yes.
Yes, for sure.
Terrible. Did he neglect his common-law wife who painted dolls? Yeah. You know?
Didn't he like abuse her like physically?
Oh,
she said she was like feared for her life. Horrible.
Yeah.
Bad.
Horrible.
bad.
Horrible guy. Yeah, he should have been on the run because he was also then duped people out of money. But there's something about conning a network because you're smarter than the network. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's so admirable in that way. And that's it. And he should have just. But I will say, if you're somebody who can take that much time, who spends a year ignoring your family, staring at computer screens, that much work also does make you a crazy person.
Absolutely. So, I mean,
you probably aren't going to communicate.
Well, it's a thing where like, right, like if someone goes on Jeopardy and decides like, I'm going to memorize every single fact in the whole world, we're like, that's good and admirable because facts are useful, but the patterns on a board are unuseful. So this man is crazy, right?
Yeah. So I don't think what he did was scammy, but I think that at the cost of the rest of his life, like you can't be an altogether healthy partner, person, father, and then spend a year staring at a wall full of TVs and not be like a super creep. Also
the
terrible.
The scam was on to everybody else in his life. He like, went out to cheat, you know, people in his life, whether mentally, physically, all those sort of things. And then he actually did a scam after.
So. Right. Then also was a scammer. Yeah. He had three different kids from three different women, which is, you know, fine. No shade if you're a wonderful person and you
sure.
keep in contact with those kids and women. But that did not happen.
Yeah.
And when he was also, this is very sad. When he was dying, he called his common-law, we'll have to call her name, Teresa was her name, to ask to speak to his son when he was dying. And his son did not want to speak with him. So that also speaks magnitudes with. If your father was never there, never around, you know, he did this one crazy thing that he was really proud of and then really was just garbage afterwards.
Absolutely.
But so smart at that time.
That time,
if we can take that capsule.
Woof.
And it was really funny because in the doc, too, they keep slowing down shot for shot of his face when he would press something. And they were like, he looked like he was in a trance. He looked like a little boy with a video game. And it was like, he was working his ass off.
Yeah. And your show really is hard. Sort of just like a little video game.
Yeah. Yeah. We're playing a live video game and he's trying to win.
With lights. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just so funny. They're like, now we have 45 different codes and, you know, we worked very hard. And I just really loved how, I mean, I just thought the whole thing was so ridiculous how horribly those people made it seem that he really ruined their whole lives when it was just like an afternoon.
Yeah, and simply fine.
So small. When really you want to hear about Teresa, you want to hear about those kids, those dolls, like really their lives
those
were
dolls,
ruined.
Yeah.
Those dolls' lives were ruined.
Are the lives of the dolls okay? Yeah.
Yeah. Are they cracked? What happened?
What happened?
Did she leave because he cracked the doll? Like that's important.
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to know so much more on the other side. And I think nowadays somebody, I'm sure there's going to be a TikTok with somebody going over it and like finding out his life. That's what's so exciting that they didn't have then. They didn't have the internet.
Exactly.
You know, any of that, any skill, any ability to.
Yes. True.
But also this has happened with other game shows. It happened with Price is Right. I think something happened with Jeopardy similarly, where somebody just becomes like an obsessed fan, an obsessed expert. And are they good people? No. Like, do they have some sort of condition where you think they're kind of weird? Yeah. Would you not want to be alone with them in an elevator? Absolutely. But they have figured out a way to study and play against the game. And I know card counting's illegal, but I secretly love it. I think it's
I think it's kind of goofy that it's illegal. It's like,
yeah, they're doing it.
It's illegal to know how the game works. Right. Like,
and most of it, all these computers are against us anyway. So these computers are like geniuses that are, we're going to lose again. So why can't you figure out how to count a card?
Yes, I think it's very goofy. I did not know that there was a Price is Right scandal. So I'm looking that up now.
Oh, yeah. That was very exciting. It was so funny because in the doc, too, they said, like, one of the producers was like, I would never have cast him. I wouldn't have picked him. I thought something was off with him, but it's their loss. And it's like, yeah, you know, they screen them. They have people in these closet rooms and they talk about them. They like, they get all their information and then they're like, great, you're going to be an amazing loser on this show.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
So what if you could create a game show? Do you know what you would, to put you on the spot totally randomly with a dog on your lap?
Yes.
What would be your like ideal game show?
I love a drawing game.
Oh, like a Pictionary?
I think there should be like a Pictionary. I don't really get why there isn't, like Family Feud style. You could have it be like two families or whatever. I think that would rule. I think it is so funny. Seeing
that is so funny.
Yes, like, and I'm an obsessive guesser. If someone's like draws a circle, I'm like tomato, person, head, circle, apple. What is it? So I'm like very into seeing whatever that would be on TV. What about you?
I wonder why there's not. I feel like there'd just be so many penis pictures accidentally that they're
that
like
might
we
be
can't.
True. That might be.
But you know
true,
what?
Actually.
The blur and a pixelated penis is even funnier when your
That's
grandma
true.
Draws it. Like,
That's
why not?
True.
Bring on the fuzzy penises, guys. I think you have something in your back pocket and you should pitch it.
Okay, you know I'm going to pitch it.
Okay.
All right, guys. Okay.
That is so funny. I love, for my favorite game show, would have to be something on a splash pad because I think splash pads are so funny and crazy and really the most fun, and people fall all. I love people falling. I hope
you love Wipeout. You already said.
I love Wipeout. I love getting like smashed with something really soft. So like not a mean person with a pillow, like a friendly pillow, but something that really takes you out.
Yeah.
And then you fall on a bed of foam.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
didn't break your coccyx, but it looks real stupid. Yeah. I love that.
That's very
funny. So I guess it would be a splash pad where you have to get across and it's either slime or water and you have to somehow run to the other side. There's got to be something with like math and numbers to make it kind of hard. But then again, I would fail because I'm dyslexic. So maybe I don't want to.
Oh my God.
Maybe I don't want to put that against me. Yeah.
Yes. So apologize if you hear me doing this and screaming Poppy so that this dog doesn't go run around my apartment.
Poppy, get it together. We're talking about what kind of show would you want? What would Poppy do? Is Poppy have a favorite treat?
All dogs or something. Bones. Game show. Winning bones.
Bones for life. Game show.
Yeah, truly.
That's amazing. Now, is there anything where like you saw a game show as a kid and you were like, I totally could do that? Because I used to watch The Price is Right with my bubby, and then we would watch Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. So we watched like three different shows a day when I was at her house in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So much. And what were your shows?
I think I was into all three of this. So I would watch those. Price is Right was usually on when I was at school, but like the other two I would watch every single day. But when it was a snow day or a sick day or something, Price is Right. I was like, I could crush this. I remember I knew the price of Flintstones vitamins at the time. I was like, wow, it's $3.68. Let's go. I think I could have crushed that. I think I could have done Wheel of Fortune. And I think I could have done Supermarket Sweep.
Supermarket Sweep. Now, I didn't have cable growing up because my parents wanted to keep us wholesome in some way, and then now we're in the entertainment industry, but we didn't have cable. But my husband said he was obsessed with Supermarket Sweep, and it's such a sadness that I didn't watch it as a kid. But I that one, do you just, I'm imagining people just like running through the aisles taking everything.
Absolutely. But you gotta like get the highest price items and stuff like that, and people always are like really stupid about that. You always have to like get the medicines and stuff like that. That's the highest price stuff. And then you can find like little secret items in there too that have like a special like little marker on it or whatever.
Yeah.
The game show. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. I remember watching, I remember thinking, now this is so telling, when I was like 9 or 10 watching Price is Right going, if I spent all that time and got into that studio audience and they never called my name, I'd be destroyed. I'd be destroyed. I remember thinking of like the sadness and the desperation that I would have felt if I didn't get picked.
Absolutely.
I just remember really like connecting with those contestants who then or got picked and never got to get on the stage. I had a lot of sorrow for them.
I agree. Especially now that we know people who have been on it and you hear how much they had to do and like.
Yes. Oh, what was Austin's thing?
She got to the Showcase Showdown and she won. She won like a drone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anything else? Did she get to go to the Bahamas or anything?
Don't remember.
See, I'll that's have the only to thing I want. Her. I just want to have a bunch of vacations.
Yeah. Taxed vacations.
I know. Oh, that's so funny.
Oh, that's so funny. In the doc, in the Google Doc, there's a TripAdvisor review of someone being a guest on The Price is Right. What a scam. Never again. Told to be there 3 hours early to interview to be on the show. Stood in the rain in a line that had 1,000 people that were never interviewed. Very disappointed in the prizes and how it was a total money-making scam. We paid $80 a ticket and it wasn't worth $5. They ought to be ashamed of themselves for running such a scam. I didn't know you had to pay. I thought it was free.
I didn't either.
Interesting.
That's amazing. That's really interesting. Wow.
That's very
I love
funny.
It.
One star.
I want to talk to more Price's Right rejects because that's I feel very sensitively towards them.
Absolutely. So sorry, Sharon. Jeez.
So sorry. Sharon, get it. We'll link it in our comments, guys. You can read all about Sharon. What is going on with you now besides this? We can send people over to see you.
Yeah. So
to
I'm
check
writing,
out your channels.
I'm writing for NBC's Grand Crew, which comes out in January. It hasn't premiered yet. So that's been a blast. I wrote on season 3 of Animaniacs, which will come out in like 2023. So that's
fabulous.
Take a minute. But season 2 comes out in November. So you should totally check that out too.
Amazing.
I host a live stream every week with my friend Jordan Myrick called Talk Chef, where we review episodes of Top Chef and talk about cooking and food with different chefs and cool comedians. We've had like Lauren Lapkus on, Rachel Bloom.
Fabulous.
We've had a lot of chefs from the show
on. I love
Rachel,
yeah.
Yeah, total blast.
That's amazing. That's so fun, guys. And we'll put all of that. If you can send me that, I'll put all of it in our notes. Everybody can see it. And that's so fun. I'm so excited to cover this with you today. This was such a delight.
This was so fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Reka. It was so fabulous. We adored having you. We are so excited. And thank you guys so much for listening. That was such a fun episode. And I completely support the studying and benefiting because you learned way too much for your own good. I think that's fabulous. But you know, you should probably care for your kids too. It's so hard to do both. And guys, if you like this episode, you can always rate us and review us. That would be awesome. You can email us at scamwildpodcast@gmail.com. Call us, you know all this stuff. And we're obsessed with you. So let us know if you were ever on a game show. Shout out to Emily. And we can't wait to see you guys next week. Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.